Welcome to Connecting with the Toms. I am Julie, your trauma-informed movement coach.
I am Dr. Tom, a biological clinical physician for the last many years. And we're here to basically help you get some information, have some fun, be relaxed, take some deep breaths, and hopefully learn some things. We have been doing these podcasts with great feedback from people because we're trying to share things that may be taken for granted, but you know, are not really that well known in the mainstream. And this really is about fun, it's about entertainment, but more importantly, it's about helping you take a piece of this, what it is that we wish to share, so that and you may implant that into your own life and make it so it's just a little bit better.
So in simple terms, we offer hope, help, and health without a prescription. Yay. Yes. So welcome, welcome, welcome. So today we wanted to dive into the world of relationships and how it impacts your health. So this is a big topic for me when I work with my clients, because a big piece of the puzzle when people are trying to heal is co-regulation. And if you don't know what co-regulation means, it's basically connecting with another, I'm going to say mammal, but connecting with another person, animal, anything with an autonomic nervous system to make you help you feel safe. Because when we come into this world, what's the number one thing a baby wants when it comes into this world?
It needs to know that it helps somebody who's loving, caring, sharing, and will look after. That's
right.
That's really the bottom line for a baby.
But when it comes right out of the womb, what does it want? It wants skin to skin, right? It's not necessarily hungry. It just went through some trauma of just coming out of a body. But the idea is a baby wants skin to skin. It wants connection. It wants to know that it is wanted, loved, and has that touch. That's why a lot of times people, you know, go skin to skin and spend a lot of time with that. So at the end of the day, humans, we want connection. So we want to co-regulate with other people. And co-regulation, regulating is basically meeting up with another person that meets our energy or our vibration or our frequency. So this is a big piece of healing, because as someone who has been undergoing her own trauma journey and healing my body, a big piece of the puzzle for me was that co-regulation piece and not really putting enough weight, I'm going to say, and understanding how important it is to find someone that you can meet that can help you and ask for help. Because a lot of times for me, part of my trauma is I asked for help and it wasn't there or wasn't meeting my needs. So I felt like I was in this constant trauma island cycle. There's a couple different directions we can go here, but I do want to touch upon, like, if you are someone that you have a difficult time connecting with other people or you don't have a person, what can you do to start healing even though you don't have a person now? So Dad, can you speak to this, or do you want me to dive right into it?
You can dive into it, and then after you share that, I'll add some thoughts.
So I'm gonna actually just share a little bit of story of how I got to this place of understanding that as humans, sometimes we have a hard time connecting with other humans because for different reasons, for whatever, you know, your history is, if you've had big T, little T traumas, or you've, you know, were born in a world of dysregulation, it can be very hard to relate to certain people, and it can be very hard to connect with people. So I've had many conversations with clients about, okay, if you don't have a person, or how do I start connecting? The number one person you need to start connecting with is you. And this is where a lot of us, we're always looking for validation or, you know, get these big emotions, I guess you could say. But the idea is that we want to feel loved by someone. We want to feel entrusted by someone. We want to feel confident when we're around somebody, right? And so at the end of the day, if you don't have those kind of people, we have to find it within ourselves. And how do we begin that journey? And so there's a lot of different directions that you can do this. But for me, this how it really came to light for me was my daughter really struggles with connecting with humans. And as a result, she has a lot of anxiety in her body and has a lot of dysregulation in her body. And she struggles with making friends. So one thing I recognized was that animals are a fantastic way to begin the process of connecting with another thing to help you learn how to start feeling safer in your body and to learn what it feels like to feel love or to feel connection or to feel worthy. and whatnot. And so a lot of times when we talk about relationships, there's some big words that a lot of people aren't familiar with in terms of they don't know what it feels like in their own body. Like a lot of people don't know what it's like to feel like I'm enough or I'm worthy or I'm loved. So what I've done with my daughter is, because she's so young, is we started introducing animals into our home so that she could start creating feeling and hanging out with this species that will show her love. Like a lot of people have dogs and cats and all these different things. And so one suggestion that I've offered for clients is looking at getting animals to start the process of feeling love. Because a lot of times is if I asked you, how do you know you feel love versus if you feel freedom or peaceful? How do you know what's the difference for you? And a lot of people don't know. And so this is where it's about, really exploring these type of things. I'm working on this emotional workshop and I've been talking about triggers and glimmers. And a lot of people don't really know what are things that bring glimmer. And so this is something that I've been doing with people, is trying to figure out like what are things that can bring glimmer and start that connect, that help you feel safe, that help you feel love, that help you feel connection. And then from there, then, where we can start stepping forward is by connecting with an animal, because they're a little bit safer than connecting with another human. Does that make sense?
That's definitely a key thing, because we live in a society now where many people are single. I think it became to the fore during the pandemic when people were alone, and depending on the city or state or province that you live in, you may have been restricted more or less to your home or home area. Going outside was a real challenge. And I think the other thing about an animal is the fact that when you do leave and come back, there's something to look forward to. And we know with an animal, whether it's a bird or a turtle or a hamster or a dog or a cat or a horse or whatever, it creates a sense of responsibility. And relationship is about self-responsibility, but also knowing that you have the wherewithal and the ability to care for another mammals, as you started with. It doesn't have to be a human being. All these animals need care when we are the master, so to speak. And I think that's important, because that's part of the reason that it is important that you, as you said, that you need to basically start with yourself. Look in the mirror. Who is this person today? And, if you're not going to look after yourself, who's going to look after your pet?
Absolutely. Responsibility is a big piece of the puzzle. And so at the end of the day, it's about, it's about these emotions and connecting with your autonomic nervous system. So animals are a great way to start there. And then from there, like, what are other things that you can do to start creating a better relationship with yourself? Like, a big buzzword has been self-care. But like you said, Dad, during the pandemic, many, many people, we were told not to be around other people. And as a result, this has caused, I believe, an increase in dysregulation in people, because they don't know how to connect with other people anymore. And you're seeing, like, I had a client this week tell me she went to a high school reunion. There's over 1,000 people there. And she said, this is probably going to be the last one. She's in her 70s. And I said, why do you think it's the last one? And she said, because the younger generation don't necessarily rely on community as much. And this is something that I'm seeing more and more common, is that people are losing the ability to connect with other people. And the biggest thing that we need in order to heal is community. It is connection. And we're just not doing it because people are afraid. So this fear and this whatever word you want to use is holding us back from the primal thing that we need, which is connection to another mammal, I'll just say mammal at the end of the day. So a process with my daughter is that we actually enlisted her in equine therapy so that she could start understanding her nervous system and start befriending her nervous system, because this is a big piece of the puzzle, is like helping her understand what color is her nervous system at any different state, because she doesn't know the words, and many, many people don't at the end of the day. So I have a client who is autistic, and one way we've started with him, he doesn't have a large vocabulary. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. Let's go with the stoplight. Because most people have seen a stoplight. So are you red, yellow, or green? And so when we can do that, that's how we can start befriending our nervous system. And so understanding that whenever I'm in, in public, or when I'm, and that's the other thing too, is that you hear a lot of people are like, they're done peopling. They don't want to people anymore, meaning they don't want to be in large crowds, and I'm definitely one of those people. That's just a reality. So I have to learn how to start feeling safe again when I'm in large crowds. And I think this is common for a lot of people. At the end of the day, it's like, okay, so we can, start to befriend our nervous system using animals, but we can also do it by understanding the color of our nervous system. So Dad, have you ever done that with any of your patients?
I mean, the only thing about color, of course, the brain protocol is full of color. I mean, we use color for every of the phases as per the chakra colors, which involves an attempt to connect to your emotions. So yes, color becomes an important component on an everyday basis, color has been used in medicine. Most common is a baby who basically is born jaundiced. In medicine, they basically stick the baby in front of the window. But now we know that the color can be used, has many medicinal purposes, and was being used much more effectively. So whether you are looking at the color, wearing the color, shining that color light, there's a variety of different ways of introducing color into your immediate environment. Has the potential of being incredibly beneficial from a health perspective.
Color can, like I said, can make a big impact in your nervous system. So really what we're trying to do is influence inside. So understand that. So if you're not familiar with the polyvagal theory, it's basically discovered in 1994 and by Dr. Stephen Porges. And there are basically three states to your nervous system. Originally, most people knew your fight or flight, your sympathetic or your parasympathetic, which is like your dorsal shutdowns. But there's a new one called the ventral state. So this is the social connection. And this is what we're talking about today. It's all about that ventral feeling of connection, safety, love, enthusiasm, joy, all these glimmer type of experiences, like things that make you feel tingly inside and make you feel happy. And so it's just a matter of what are things that make you feel green. So if you sat down right now and, think about, okay, what are some glimmers in my life? Like I know my dad goes for a walk every day. That's a glimmer. Yeah, Dad? The glimmer is definitely walking. Playing with his dogs is another glimmer. I know he likes to, especially on those hot days in Arizona, on those hot days, hanging out in the pool, that could be a glimmer. So what you want to do is just start listing things that are glimmers for you. What are things that make you feel green? Okay. And then you have the yellow. Yellow is sympathetic. That's your fight or flight state. And the problem is many of us who have health issues are noted what's happening is that your body is stuck in this survival state, in this fight or flight state. Are you coming or are you going? And your body is constantly stuck in this loop. And so you want to be able to identify your triggers. What is keeping you in this loop? What's keeping you yellow? So if you're like standing in line at a gas station or stuck in traffic, or I don't know, like keep getting emails or something like that, or something happens at work, recognizing that, hey, I'm in yellow right now. Okay, what do we want to do? So you want to identify what is that trigger? Okay, and then from there, we want to bring in the glimmer. What can we do? Once I'm yellow, what can I do to hold hands with green? Make sense? And then the same thing would be for dorsal as your shutdown. So this is where grief, shame, disassociation, depression tends to hang out. And this is where, that parasympathetic aspect of the body, just chronic fatigue, people who struggle with that, the headaches, a lot of the dysregulation that happens in our body tends to push us in this shutdown zone. And that's the red zone. So again, being red or yellow is not bad, but we want to be able to understand, like, how do we hold hands? How do we bring in green into when we feel these situations? And that's how we can start improving the relationship, A, with ourselves, and then B, notice, like, when I'm around certain people, I feel green, or I feel red, or I feel yellow. And when you start understanding, can actually bring awareness to that, that's how you start improving the relationship with yourself, which will then improve the relationships that you have with other people. Any comments to that, Dad?
Those are all excellent points. I just thought of something that I'm going to bring up a minute ago when you're talking about community and how we're moving away from community. I think it was exacerbated by the pandemic. Because where would people typically go? You would go to church on Sunday. Well, church became virtual. So you didn't get to talk to anybody. You didn't see a neighbor. You didn't see a friend on the street. We didn't go to the grocery store. We didn't go to the movie theater. We didn't go bowling. People started to drift away from one of the most important aspects in our life, which is just a social interaction whether it's a hello or goodbye or how are you doing today is important. And I'm reminded by teenage patients who will be sitting in the same room as someone else, and instead of opening their mouths and talking, they text them. So people are losing the ability to literally to communicate with words. And we have a society now that unfortunately has trouble spelling words because either they're using short forms or Google corrects it to something else, and they don't pay much attention to it. So it's important that when whole idea of relationship, it's how do you include that in your everyday life with the people around you? You know, we talked about in one of the previous podcasts, the whole idea of, well, people will live longer, and people in relationships do live longer. Scientifically, the jar over and over of what people are doing. What we really need to do is have some form of personal interaction with people. And what's interesting about that is one of the ways that we can deal with trauma is decreasing our cortisol level, which is the flight fright aspect, which we are often, as you mentioned, our nervous system stuck in. You're either stuck at red or stuck at yellow. But but nobody talks about the other hormone that is the anti-stress hormone, which is oxytocin. And, you know, oxytocin is, moms will be familiar with that word because it's something that happens mostly during childhood. But oxytocin is the love hormone. It's the one that gets released when you hug your partner, a friend, colleague, will say. And interestingly, dogs, when they lie on the back and they rub their belly, what you're doing is you're releasing their oxytocin. So it's a lovely component, and we definitely watch more of this in our society, obviously in an appropriate way for what's going on, because the aspect that happened in COVID, of course, is that people were restricted or prevented from, you know, being in close contact with other people. Everybody was wearing a mask. And of course, the whole idea of hugging somebody was just out the window. So for several years, other than your immediate family members, it was something that was lost. I have a sense that it hasn't been regained yet, because people are still somewhat reluctant to suddenly jump back into that, because there's still not a segment of the population that, and understandably so, they have probably very good reason. For some, they may have some type of chronic illness and are reluctant to be in the presence of others. Don't overlook the aspect that it's one thing to reduce our stress, but it's another thing to improve our oxytocin levels. Actually, one of my prescriptions. They would sit this together, they're great with each other. I said, you know, one of your homework assignments is that you have to hug each other 2 to 3 times every day. This is probably close to a year ago, and they're still doing it. And it's one of the ways that they're able to reconnect with each other. So I think it's a thing that we need to be very mindful of on an ongoing basis with our partners, with our families, kids, grandkids, et cetera. But also from the aspect of just in general, to be accepting that we need that type of thing. And we need to learn how to talk to each other again, not in capital letters, but just in soft tone. That doesn't make us afraid to get in a conversation. And you need to continue to do everything you can to minimize your stress reactions, you know, which is all the previous podcasts that we ultimately have talked about. Let's take the opportunity to try and increase on a regular basis our oxytocin level. And if you don't have a partner, as we said earlier, a pet does just a great job, because, you know, it does give us a sense of support. It does give us a sense of belonging. It does give us a sense of responsibility. We have to manage and look out for someone else in our immediate sphere.
So, question I have for you then: with oxytocin, do you have to be with someone for it to release, or can you release oxytocin on your own?
That's a great question. I hadn't thought of it that way, because it's always talked about that, you know, the best way to deal with it is to be in close contact with somebody. And what's happening is the oxytocin is flowing. That's why oxytocin is a part of the whole birthing process. for moms and for babies. And don't forget the importance of the dad in that relationship also, so that you're getting an immediate bonding along with and not only the mother.
Okay. Now I'm just intrigued because I don't know enough about it. So I need to be in close contact with somebody to release oxytocin. But when I do things for self-love, do I still release oxytocin?
I don't know the answer to that, but it seems to, what seems to be suggested by all literature and that type of thing, when you're trying to do it, it's really trying to be in contact with someone else or something else, aka an animal, that basically you feel, because it's the, as you were spoken about, it's the sense of feeling an attachment, the sense of feeling a belonging, the sense of feeling responsibility, the sense that love brings to all of us. You know, you don't say, oh, I'm gonna just think about releasing oxytocin. It's not that quite easy, because this is almost a subconscious thing that we're doing. A lot of the behaviors that we talk about are in our consciousness, and it's very difficult to tap into your unconscious by just by conscious thought. So, you know, you don't go and think about, oh, if I go and hug somebody, I'm going to release oxytocin. Nothing will probably happen if you're consciously thinking about it. It's something that sort of bubbles up inside you without knowing that it's actually happening. Just have the sense of, well, you know, I feel good. I feel good to be in the presence of different people. Just like there's some people who do not feel good in the presence of, because probably it's creating a negative reaction, unbeknownst to you that's happening. You're just uncomfortable. And if you ask somebody, well, why are you uncomfortable? They won't know why this is uncomfortable. I suspect it has to do with brain neurotransmitters. I suspect it probably has to do with, we've talked about in previous podcasts, the whole idea, the effect that trauma has on our life, and gets buried in our unconscious, and we don't know how to tap into it. And so we just respond, unfortunately, in a negative way, be it anxiety, be it fear, be it anger, be it jealousy, whatever that particular emotion is. And people often don't even know why they suddenly have that emotion. Where did it come from? It's a real concern, a real problem, and something that we hope for, we're talking about. Help people take stock of life so that they can actually get past that blocked emotional chakra, because that's where the emotions are being blocked. There's different chakra areas, which is why color is so important.
Okay, so there's two things. I want to talk about attachment theory, but the one thing that you got me thinking about is intention, because like you're saying, like what you said is, you know, like if I'm going to just go hug someone just because I know it's going to release oxytocin. And a lot of times I'm not a hugger per se, but I hug my kids a lot. And I think I do it as a mom because I know it makes them feel good. But like, how does intention play in there? So because a lot of times, like when I'm trying to learn the feeling of love and connection and safety, it's like these are activities that can release that. So can I bring intention in there? If I bring intention, wouldn't that help me release oxytocin too, or no?
I think I would say yes. And I think what needs to happen is like training the brain, you know, a new behavior. So we say that if you want to break a habit that you're not happy with, you have to keep doing it over and over and over and over and saying it to yourself. You know, that's why we're talking about positive affirmations. That's why we talk about prayer. That's why we talk about meditation, to put our brain in a different place. And people will often say, well, I can't meditate because my mind wanders. I said, you have to keep doing it. Just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. And one day it'll be like, oh, I get it. I get that I can go into a relaxed state. The goal is that you can sort of reframe or retrain your brain. Previously have talked about the whole idea of breathing and the sequence of breathing and the importance of breathing. When you practice, we'll say box breathing, inhale for four, you hold for four, you breathe out for four, you wait for four. When you do that often enough consciously, it will actually become unconscious. The goal with relationship is to do something with intention often enough so that you don't have to think about it. And just the mere thought of going to hug your kids, because let's say they're at school and, you know, you feel that you need that feel good. So you create the intention as if they're actually in your presence. I believe over time you have the ability, because the brain is such an amazing instrument, you have the ability over time, just like we can change our breathing to conscious and unconscious. I think we can change the aspect of the release of these hormones, neurotransmitters, in a positive way. Just keep practicing over and over. The best practice, of course, is to actually have someone that you in your presence, and how good that makes you feel. And you sort of start locking into how good it feels when I feel better. And how can I maintain that? And so nothing short of repeating it over and over and over will, in my experience, allow somebody to continue to experience that, even if they're not in the presence of somebody, but they can recreate it, not without a lot of hard work to get there.
To me, it's like now we're getting into this mind over body, body over mind kind of situation. Because like you said, like you're talking about little practice, you practice it over and over again. That's how the whole concept of movement snacks came up. That's how I came up with it, in terms of understanding that if we do these little micro actions to help us, it's going to lead. It's like you're just sowing some seeds, and then eventually the tree will grow and your roots are just going to get deeper and deeper, because you're ingraining it into your nervous system and into your body. Yeah, so I'm like, that's such a big topic. I'm like, we can almost do that the next time. It's just like, how to sync your mind and body. Where do you start? Do you start with the mind? Do you start with the body? Because at the end of the day, you know, we're getting into the body, but how do we start that process? So maybe we'll like park that for a minute, and then we could talk about it next time, because I think that's a really good debate. Because I think for me, I've learned that just using the mind and getting mind over matter, you know, fake it till you make it, has been words for me have not been helpful, because it's almost, it's creating this imposter syndrome, and it's creating this belief in my system that I'm not good enough. And so I'm like, no, I have to change that. And that's something that we could talk about later. But anyway, I just wanted to touch on that. You mentioned attachment theory a little bit ago, and I think we can't do a relationship podcast without talking about attachment theory. This is something that if you do not know what your attachment style is, if you don't know about it, we all have an attachment, basically attachment theories from the 60s, I believe. There is a researcher, and her name is escaping my brain at this moment, but essentially this researcher analyzed babies and moms and had them do different situations. And there are basically four different types of attachment that we get from our relationship with our mothers. Do you believe that, well, first of all, Dad, do you address attachment theory at all with your patients when we talk about relationships, or that's not something that you do?
I do not use that word, you know, per se. In fact, there's lots of words that I don't use, because I make conversations with patients the level of course 101. Because in medicine, unfortunately, as many people will attest to, when their doctor talks, they have no clue what the hell the doctor's talking about. So they just sort of tune out. So the things that I use are usually simpler conversations, simpler words. And perhaps a psychologist or a psychiatrist would get into that type of thing. But for everyday conversation, I try and just use simple examples, simple ideas, not even so much that the patient had really knows that, oh, this is the reason we're doing it, because ultimately just doing it will create the result that I'm looking for, and people will feel better whether or not they know oxytocin is being released and why it makes them feel better.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. I agree. So when we were talking before, you actually talked about like when you do your intake form with your patients, when you talk about relationships and whatnot, do you want to talk about like what's the information that you're gathering when you're starting to work with somebody?
So anytime you go to any type of a medical practice, I mean, you obviously have to fill out some form of an intake form about some basic information, which obviously includes where you live, your address and your work and that kind of thing. But generally, it also said, you know, if you have another contact person who, you know, we would be able to contact. And invariably, on the intake forms I've looked at for the last 5 decades, decades, there generally is a partner, although on rare occasion, there is nobody listed. But for the most part, there is a partner that's listed on the page, whether they're married or whether it's a child or son or daughter, or whatever. But then on page two of the intake form, one of the questions that I asked said, who do you know that will successfully support you and any of the suggestions and recommendations, you know, we'll be laying out forward as we move forward? And something that I always shudder at when I see that when they write, there's no one. This is a very, very difficult thing that I find in medicine to support people long term, truly to guide them to a wholly, whole different level of wellness and health when they don't have a support person. And it's especially troubling if on the front page they're married or growing children or that, you know, somebody that really is in their immediate sphere and they don't have someone who could support them. So this is usually a telltale sign that this will be a more challenging case, no matter what it is that the patient may be coming to speak to me about. And so we really do need somebody. And if you don't have an actual partner that you live with, lives in your space, then I asked, do I have a girlfriend? Do you go to book club? Do you go to the library? Do you have somewhere that you socialize with somebody? Do you have a priest? Do you have a minister? Do you have a rabbi? You need social contact in order to reach to a heightened level of wellness, whoever it is. And pets, as we talked about earlier, are great, but they don't talk back, unfortunately, a little bit to wag their tail or purr if it's a cat. Or, you know, if it's a bunny rabbit, just be soft and cuddly and furry, you know, that type of, it gives us this sense of, well, there's like a good feeling. And that's what we're trying to generate. You mentioned it earlier. What can you do on an everyday basis to create that sensation? So what we can do every day is to, you know, keep reminding people that it's important that they interact with people, and preferably not by a text, preferably not by email, but preferably by FaceTime, behaviors that will allow you to create this internal sense of a nicety, feel good. And, you know, it's always interesting when you ask somebody, well, what do you mean? What is it? What is I feel good? What is that? You know, some people say, well, I don't have pain today, but which is one of the markers, but usually I feel good. It's not something that you can put your finger on and say it's just this internal knowing without knowing. It's almost like intuition. I feel good today. Everything seems to be working well. My brain is in a good place. I'm not worried about something at this moment in time. So we leave that, you know, wandered around a number of topics as per usual with our podcast today. I think it's important to hopefully the takeaway is that if you're in a relationship, make sure you culture that. It's not something that we need to take for granted ever. And the whole idea of being in community is an important aspect. Even if you do live alone, we know from COVID that was a very devastating impact of COVID, perhaps even worse than the actual virus was itself. It's the fact that people totally became isolated. And when you become isolated for extended periods of time, just think about, you know, somebody is in a place and doesn't have the opportunity to really talk to somebody or interact with somebody in the flesh. It makes it a very difficult circumstance and situation. Fortunately, has a major impact on our brain, which then affects our sleep, our appetite, and our mood, how we breathe, how our organs function, et cetera, et cetera. So let's use the opportunity that we've been trying to talk about as to, you know, put something in your life, as Julie said, a mammal of some type, whether it's a humanoid mammal or a four-legged mammal, and or a bird, or a feathery mammal, parrot that can talk back to you, something that you can look after. I think is an important aspect of helping you regain your health. It's not in a place where you need it to be. Make that an everyday thing, almost like all the rest of our basic treatment guidelines that we are doing on a regular basis to support our general health overall.
Okay, so bottom line is connection matters. Try to find someone, something. You know, if you have an animal, great, but if you are alone, it is definitely important that you do seek out someone, some place, some community that you can join that has a common thread that you can relate to that will help you heal. That's the common denominator that we want you to understand, that, you know, there's lots of different ways to start befriending your nervous system, but start to, you know, write down your triggers and your glimmers, find out what your nervous system's telling you so that you know what that feeling is, and then start getting closer to people so that you can release that oxytocin and get familiar with that feeling, and then start that ball rolling. And that's how you can start improving your relationships, which will ultimately impact your health. So thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. We're always looking for feedback and ideas on what we can chat about in the future. So thank you so much. And Dad, do you have any other parting thoughts?
As I said, I think we've said it throughout the podcast. It should be pretty straightforward. So go forward to talking to you with the next podcast.
Well, thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you the next time about mind-altering tools and how they could possibly help you or not.
Stay tuned.
We want to remind you that knowledge isn't power. Applied knowledge is power, where knowledge turns to experience. We encourage you to implement the information shared, allowing you to shift your health and energy. And if this is your first time listening, we truly appreciate you being here and would love to have your support by subscribing to our channel. We also love hearing from you, so please connect with us and share your thoughts. And if you have any ideas for future podcasts, please let us know. If you're interested in learning more about biological medicine or trauma-informed movement, check out the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to connecting with you in the future.